Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hey, my name's Adam from Toronto, Ontario. And I subscribe to the Creative Control Patreon because I feel that at the end of the day, there are very few people in the industry who are able to consistently get the kind of quality interviews out of very diverse subjects of many creative stripes and disciplines, as Vish does pretty well on every episode of the podcast. It's a no-brainer to me that I want to support this when you factor that in to all of the bonus content you get on Patreon. And, you know, it's a listener-supported podcast, so I want to keep the great content coming. So that's why you should also support Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Pemberton is a musician, writer, broadcaster, journalist, and producer based in Toronto, Ontario. Originally from Edmonton, Alberta, Pemberton is internationally known as Cadence Weapon, one of the world's most innovative and ahead of his time hip-hop artists. His new album is a brilliant one called Parallel World, which is out April 30th, 2021 via Entertainment One, and boasts production and feature assists from the likes of Backwash, Fat Tony, Manga St. Hilaire, Jacques Green, Danny Phantom, and Koreatown Acid, among others. Rolly and I connected recently to discuss pandemic life in Toronto and his new connection to Guelph, the contemporary themes and historical echoes on the politically charged parallel world, the downsides of predicting the future and taking some actual artistic risks, insights about his recent collaborators, writing a book, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network, with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, with additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, and friendly staff who will happily help you source special orders for hard-to-find titles, which you can learn more about at blackbird.ca. And Massey Hall's concert film series, live at MasseyHall.com, where you can stream dozens of 30-minute films for free, including performances by past podcast guests like Shad. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 610th episode of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Rolly Pemberton, a.k.a. Cadence Weapon, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Get on your fault to the critics. Hit the asphalt dance off, I'm a menace. I'm not afraid to be who I am, you know. I always tell people, be yourself. That's the number one shit I tell people. I don't follow anybody else. I never did. Idiosyncratic and iconoclastic. I am me, motherfucker. Be you. Sinner, 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 sinner. Hey, Rolly, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you doing, Vish?
I'm well. It's nice to have you back on the show. And I, as you may know, I always begin by asking people where they are. So the tradition continues. Rolly, where in the world are you today?
I'm in Toronto. I'm at home.
Nice. How are things at home in Toronto as we're speaking today?
Well, I said that like that because that's the only place I can be these days.
You're not at the CN Tower. You're not in the Sky Dome anticipating some event to start, like a game, a Blue Jays game. No, you're at home.
At a Ripley's Aquarium.
Just trying to think of all the touristy things that are... I kind of miss Toronto sometimes, I must admit.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Having lived in Guelph adjacent to it, I liked going in. And then I always liked leaving as well, like just having the luxury. Do you ever... I know you're really cooped in right now, but do you ever... You've lived in a few different cities now in Canada. Are you still mm-hmm. loving Toronto, so to speak?
I feel like I've kind of forgotten a lot of the things that I really like about Toronto and, you know, in the past year. But I still think it's pretty vibey. I feel like it's, you know, when it's at its best, when it's like really popping, when there's a lot of energy, it's a great city.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but right now I have no idea.
Right. Have you been almost completely locked down this past year, or have you ventured out into the world beyond Toronto or anywhere? Like, have you gone anywhere really? And since, let's say March of 2020,
the only place really I've gone is when, there was no lockdown briefly. I would go to the studio and record this album. And then also I would, go to Guelph actually and visit my girlfriend's family when it was, safe to go outside and hang outside with them.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Guelph, that's where I used to live. I didn't know you had didn't know you had a connection to Guelph. So you've been... I left Guelph and now everyone's moving there or visiting there. Mm-hmm. I've heard this. And I was like, what? Were they like, finally, that guy and his family are gone.
Well, let me be specific though. I mean, it's partly Fergus, Ontario.
Oh, okay, not Guelph.
No.
Yeah,
but but also Guelph.
Okay.
There's two households in the region.
I feel like you have a pretty strong Guelph connection. I mean, I know it from asking you to come on. My wife and I had the old college radio show, the Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show, and you. I think for us, we were very thrilled to have an actual in-person guest between 7 and 9, 7 and 9 in the morning. Like, you were in the house, like literally,
yeah.
And you helped program the show. And I think it's the first time I'd ever heard Justice, maybe.
Oh, wow.
You had like brought your own, I asked you to pick songs, and I thought of you as someone who would know things I don't, and we don't. We didn't, I guess. And yeah, I think that happened. It sticks out in my mind of like, oh, Rolly. And I think when they kind of broke later, I was like, oh, I should just listen to Rolly. He knows what's going on. And
that's usually the way it goes, man. I mean, the advertisers really like me, and they track me a lot because they want to know what they need to attach to later.
Yes, this is outlined in your one of your brilliant new songs, On Me, I believe. Is that the one you're alluding to?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm suggesting.
Yes, well, I appreciate your insistence that we start getting down to business and talking about your record with a subtle segue. Well, that was really good.
I want to specify, though, you talk about my Guelph connection. I'm pretty sure you are my Guelph connection.
Oh, is, like, that, is that right?
Pretty okay. much just you. And Noah 23 and Hillside Festival. That's pretty much the extent of my Guelph connection.
Right. And I mean, yeah. People like Noah and I would have also said, hey, Hillside Festival, you know who would be good to get? Rolly, Cadence Weapon. And so, yeah, that's fair. I appreciate that. But now, but let's just backtrack a little bit. Now it sounds like you have a whole new Guelph-Fergus connection. So yeah.
I do.
Yeah. So that's good.
My partner is, we always tell people she's from near Guelph.
Fergus has its own identity. Like, Fergus is actually it's a little quiet, quaint, rural, I guess, town. Like, it's not very big. It's not considered, I think they get upset if they heard that they were being described as some sort of Guelph satellite location, like a suburb of Guelph. You know, Guelph is always like, in America, they would call Guelph a suburb of Toronto, even though it's like an hour and a half right. away or whatever it is. So with traffic, I used to, oh man, I don't miss some Ontario stuff. Like the Ontario thing for me that I always resonates with me is, say I want to go see Cadence Weapon play a show in Toronto, so I leave at a reasonable hour of the day. I try to avoid the traffic situation. It would take sometimes, because of the construction and the infrastructural issues, 3 hours to get to your show. And then after the show is done, you know, it'd be late at night, I'd be at my door from Toronto in like 50 minutes. So it didn't make any sense. I mean, it was just rush hour and crap. But that seemed to happen. That didn't happen when I was a kid growing up in Ontario, is all I'm saying. So I do feel like I left. This is maybe just me overcompensating, but I do feel like we left Ontario in a bad place. And there are, you know, and you're talking a lot about Toronto on your record, I should say, Parallel World. I feel like there are allusions to how bad Toronto seems to be and how bad Ontario seems to be under its current leadership. Is that a fair impression to take away from this record?
I wouldn't say it's like how bad Toronto is. It's about the state of cities in the world today. Like it's something that I think anybody can relate to what I'm speaking about, but I'm speaking about my specific region, you know, and there's some specific Canadian stuff in there, but I think anybody, you know, in New York, especially London, places like this, big cities, can relate to what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, specifically, you're talking about Canada. When the first song on the record, Africville's Revenge, I don't actually want to put words in your mouth, but you do highlight some geographic locations across Canada that have traditionally been places where Black people have settled and have also established themselves and communities. Again, I just said I wasn't going to put words in your mouth, and now I'm kind of doing it. Can you talk a little?
Oh, please do.
Well, I'm sorry. Fine.
Get me started.
Well, is this accurate? I'm just curious about the motivation for writing that, but it's a really short kickoff to the record, but it's very impactful. And for those of us who don't know the history, it's probably going to get us Googling these places you mentioned and what was going on. So that is kind of my primer. What do you want to say about that particular song?
Well, that was the purpose for me. I wanted to, I think it's emblematic of the rest of the record, because I really wanted to do songs that were very dense and had a lot of information in them and had a lot of ideas in them, but they happened to be quite short. And I feel like that song, one of the big things I've really been focusing on is, you know, really emphasizing Black Canadian history, because I feel like when I was growing up in Edmonton, I didn't know it existed. at all. Like, I didn't know anything about Amber Valley in Alberta. Like, even though I've come to find out that I have cousins who are ancestors who live there, and I didn't know about Africville. I'd never heard about any of this stuff growing up, you know? And I used to just think, oh, well, my culture is just in America and it's in Africa. Like, it's, we didn't really have Canadian culture. So my idea of Africville's Revenge is this totally disenfranchised community of Black people near Halifax who, you know, they put the garbage dump by their community. They put everything bad you can think of by their community, and essentially just they raised their town. You know, I think it's really crazy that this wasn't a bigger deal until recently. Like, I feel like I've seen in the news a little bit, you know, there's like a big highway near there, I guess, like an off ramp that used to be the town.
Yeah.
And there's a plaque now. But my whole thing is like, I want to talk about this history so everyone in the world knows about it, because I don't think people have that vision of Canada, you know, as being a place that does the same thing that America did, you know, with all these different communities where they put, you know, highways through Black communities. They displaced Black communities first, you know, thinking about stuff like Robert Moses in New York and what he did to New York and what he did to the Bronx. And so I just wanted to, you know, carry some parallels with that on that track. And also just kind of talking about the importance of maintaining cultural history. Yeah. And I feel like I represent that, you know, like that's my role as an artist, as an oral storyteller, is to maintain that cultural history. And so it's like, if I don't rap about it, who will, right? And it's like, not only can I rap about it and I can do it in a cool way that is, you know, approachable, but it also, it does what the function is. Like it's now another example of that history. Right. So it's like I'm adding on to that history. And it's like I talk about Little Jamaica later on in the album in Toronto.
Yeah.
And this is a neighborhood that I've really been passionate about since I've been living in Toronto. And they're going through some transit based gentrification over the past 10 years. That's, you know, closed over 100 businesses where they're building this LRT line. And I've been doing a lot of advocacy around that. And, you know, I feel like another example of this advocacy is just by like rapping about it. I wrote an article in Hazlitt about it. I've done all these interviews about it. And it's like, the more that I talk about it, the harder it is for them to get rid of something.
Right.
That's my rationale. Right.
Right. Right. So you're using your platform in various ways. As we're speaking, you are a known musical artist. You are a known journalist and writer. You have a newsletter going as well. So you're kind of exploring lots, and social media, of course. I mean, that's how you kind of spread the word about such things. You are doing your best to use everything at your disposal to discuss these things, I guess, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. I feel like the biggest difference for me in my career now is I found a way to tie it all together.
Yeah.
You know, like I used to be just doing these things like here and there, kind of piecemeal, where they wouldn't really speak to each other. But now it's like, okay, stuff that has started off as just being a tweet has expanded into becoming fundraisers, into becoming songs, into becoming articles, and it's all tied into the same preservation of Black communities in Canada. You know, and it seems to be working and resonating with people. So I don't know. It's just like, I know music is my main thing, but it really makes it more meaningful when there's some kind of real world component to it, you know?
Yeah. And I assume you might be inspired by some like some of the scholars and writers that have emerged over the past few years in Canada, in Toronto. Desmond Cole comes to mind. Robin Maynard comes to mind. Cyrus Marcus Ware comes to mind. Are you aware of some of these people? Are you inspired by what's happening? Because I feel like just by they being outspoken and addressing things, I mean, what you're describing when we were talking about Africville's Revenge and Canada's relationship with its own history, which is strained often in terms of Black history in Canada, I feel like it's a strained, purposefully oblivious acknowledgement of that history. And, oh, that doesn't happen here.
Yeah.
You know, that's an American issue. So I guess back to my question, are you seeing a rise in advocacy, scholarship, if you will, discussions, you know, discourse about these things? Are you aware of this? Does it feel like something's going on in that regard?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it really inspired a lot of my writing. And just over the past few years, you know, like I've been following Desmond Cole really closely. ever since I read the article he did for Toronto Life, the skin I'm in, which really, I think that article single-handedly proved to so many people, it's like, yes, there is racism in Canada. And it's like undeniable. It's like when someone gets stopped and carded and interrogated by police over 50 times for no reason, like, you know, there's something systematic at play here, right? Yeah. And it's like seeing someone else talk about their experience, it made me realize it's like, oh my God, like this has happened to me. And I try to like ignore it or something. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
I think the biggest thing just over the pandemic, like last summer, you know, with the George Floyd protests and just everything that came from that, I couldn't help but notice how all of these institutions that I thought, you know, were really unassailable were actually under a really flimsy foundation.
Yeah.
You know, like all these really just the fact that racial inequality, structural inequality, it's so obvious and it was put in such stark relief so quickly in the pandemic that it was like, okay, well, everybody notices it now. It's like all this stuff that I've been noticing and thinking about my entire life, all the people start talking to me about, hey, have you ever experienced microaggressions? It's like, yeah, bro, I rapped about it on my last album. Like, you know, it's like, but now people have the language, and that's partly from writers like Desmond Cole, you know, like Robin Maynard.
Yeah. You are often, I think, and I feel like it's maybe to your detriment somehow, but I don't think it's a bad thing. You're ahead of your time a little bit because you referenced your last album, which is the last time you were on this show to have a long form conversation. We dug into your last record, which was self-titled, and I thought rather brilliant. And I think we talked about it marking something of a tonal shift for you in terms of what you wanted to use your platform for as a musician specifically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't want to be reductive about this because it does seem to me that Parallel World is sort of part of this trajectory of, see, the reductive part is I don't want to say like you've suddenly became conscious. Like that's bullshit. Yeah. But I do think if I think back on your catalog preceding that last record, it was a little more, it was a little, again, totally reductive. There's probably a case-by-case analysis that could be completed by someone. I'm not going to do it now in terms of every single song you've ever written. But
it does, lay it on me, man.
Well, I'm just to be reductive, but I hope for a helpful reason. It seems to me that your shift in a narrative structure went from like talking about you and your friends and your experiences to shifting into like, well, what are those experiences saying? What do they say about the larger, bigger picture, you know, about the world around us? And I feel
absolutely.
Like, is that okay? Good. Sorry. I know I was
fumbling there. You're on it.
Okay.
No, you're on it. Like, I think that's something I've observed just listening to my old records and thinking like, you know, okay, here's an example. You know, I have a song, you know, We Move Away. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I'm talking about some of the same themes that are on this album, on my last album, gentrification. Why are all my friends moving away from Edmonton? You know, and back then, it was just like, Edmonton's a great place. Why would you move away from here? Like it was a kind of a more superficial surface level assessment of why people move away. But then now I'm getting to the idea of like, how can I pull the camera further back and make it wider screen, you know, and really get to the root issues behind why these things happen. That's what I really want to talk about. That's what's really exciting to me now is like, and part of this is just, you know, reading more and really being able to parse news more and just being more in touch with the culture and what's going on.
Yeah.
But I feel like that is my like skill. That's like what I can really do is I can synthesize the world around me in a way that I don't really hear in a lot of other music. And it's like, I feel like I wasn't using that skill to its full extent previously.
Yeah.
But I think that's the big difference now.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to insinuate that the music you made when you were younger was like totally navel gazing or anything like that. I do feel like bigger picture issues were kind of permeating the work you were doing. And when you're talking about your community of friends and what you're going through, you're feeling that pressure, that big picture pressure. I'm sure of it. But this seems more pointed. I will also say, like, Africville's Revenge has a musical soundscape that brought me back to Breaking Kayfabe. And I don't know, was that purposeful in any way? Like, just the sound and the tones, the things you've been dogged with, like, what the hell is this guy's production? Yeah. I don't understand it. He seems like some sort of noise artist. What is happening? Was that purposeful to sort of grab our attention again with, because you're talking about Amber Valley, which, as you pointed out, you maybe didn't know much about. I think it's only a couple hundred kilometers away from Edmonton, where I am, where you're from. Yeah. So it's close by. I couldn't help but think, like, is this just a way of getting back to your roots, your origins a little bit? Not only talking about that place, but sonically kind of giving it that, you know, the first flavor we had of Cadence Weapon from all those years ago now. What has it been, 16 years or something?
I mean, for me, it was, in a way, it was like reclaiming my legacy. Because I feel like I was really one of the first people to rap over music like that. And then it's become a lot more commonplace, you know, whether you say like Run the Jewels or like Yeezus. Yeah. When that came out, I was just like, are you kidding me? Right. but that happens to me a lot. That's happened to me like several times in my career. So I've kind of gotten over it. But I think the thing is, it's almost like I wanted this album, as I was making it, I was feeling like, okay, this is like a more refined version of Breaking Kayfabe in a lot of ways. Like, really is like the mature version of it. Just it's me at this point, but you know, it's got the same kind of immediacy and urgency to it, but the music is different, you know, and I'm a different person. But it's like, there, I definitely see the parallel. In fact, I feel like the cover is similar too.
Yeah,
if you actually think
it is. It's a the original, for those who haven't seen it, the Breaking Kayfabe cover was an illustration, but it was an illustration, among other things, of Rolly's face. But you were kind of in a your teeth were clenched, I guess.
I was snarling.
And the new album is your face. Almost, it seems like it's blurred out. It's like you're in motion. I would say, shaking your head or something. And it's similar. You know, now that you mention it, I can see the corner. I can see the snarl on the left side of your face. Like, I can kind of see it there, even though it's all distorted. So, okay, so you are saying there is some connection. What I was saying isn't that all, maybe completely far off base. You're seeing some connection between this latest work and, you know, what is ostensibly your debut album. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure, yeah. And I feel like another thing about it is, this record is the first time I've had the ability to lock in like I did on the first album. You know, because I made that record when I was, you know, living in my mom's house in my mom's attic, just making beats.
Yeah.
You know, and this whole pandemic has felt exactly the same. It feels like I'm just back, you know, in a stationary place. I'm not touring. I'm not doing other projects. I'm just totally here. And I've been just sitting, doing research, absorbing the world around me and expressing how I feel about it in the same way. You know, I feel like it's kind of like an upgrade on that.
So does Parallel World as an umbrella title have multiple meanings then? Because you actually used the phrase parallels when talking about Canada's legacy of racism and the mistreatment of black people here. And I think you were comparing it maybe with America. But now you're talking about this other kind of parallel between your earliest expression and your latest expression. Is it a multi-layered title in that regard?
It is actually it's got several different meanings for me. I mean, the initial way I was thinking of it was, you know, during the pandemic, I'm thinking like, man, I wish there was like an alternate reality where this wasn't happening or something, you know.
Yeah.
But then, and it was like this idea of like imagining a better world that's, you know, maybe happening at the same time as ours, you know. But then I was also thinking like, you know, that's what music is. It's this parallel world where, like, you know, you can live somewhere else in your mind. And I've done that so much with music. And I wanted to create that for people, especially in this specific time.
Right.
But for me, the primary meaning that I've given it is basically how, you know, two people can be living in the same city, on the same street, walking down the street, and they can experience life completely differently, depending on their race. You know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few songs that I think delve into that. Eye to Eye comes to mind, maybe.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So you are delving into kind of the lived experience of being someone in Toronto, and a Toronto that isn't as equitable as some people. I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm just too close to it. I feel like most of us recognize that Toronto isn't that's safe a place to be in, particularly if you're a person of color. Is that resonating more with people, or do we still have this denial that it is a multi, you know, cultural oasis, a utopia of multiculturalism and multiracialism or what have you? Is it starting to resonate with people more, do you think, that Toronto has many issues in this vein?
Yeah, I think it is. I think inequality highlights conflict and it creates conflict. And I feel like now people are being a bit more mindful about how the press navigates relationships between race and authority in Toronto, you know? And I feel there's just been so many situations, you know, where people don't know. This is the other thing is, like, I really want to emphasize is, like, we have racism in Canada. You know, I think of, like, the DeFonte Miller situation, Chantel Krupka, DeAndre Campbell. Like, we have a bunch of hashtags and names here in Canada too.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all hunky-dory, you know, so.
No, yeah, and I think, I hope people who hear this show that I make have been hearing this commentary from people like yourself, people like Desmond Cole, others, you know, who talk about their lived experience. So I think it is, I hope, and I'm not trying to, you know, I have no beef with Toronto tourism or Canadian tourism, you know, necessarily, but I do think it's worth, definitely worth talking about these things.
Yeah, that's the thing is also, I want to reiterate, you know, it's like, you know, I may talk about these things, I may be approaching where I live and where I'm from with a critical lens, but it doesn't mean like I hate Canada or something like I hate Toronto. Like, I actually believe in the possibility and the potential of these places to be better. That's what being critical really means.
Absolutely. It
means you believe in a parallel world where it's better.
Well, I don't see why anyone would just gripe about something if they didn't believe it could be better. You know, it's, you're not complaining for the sake of complaining, so to speak. You're pointing out things critically via critical analysis in hopes that things improve. I think that's clear. But to your point, maybe people don't always, I guess that's true. People don't see outspokenness as constructive or its intention as being constructive.
It's like they don't, you know, people don't really want to read into it long enough to really understand like the complexity of the argument.
Yes.
You know, sometimes it's like, you know, people, when they see this is my political record, that's really funny to me. Once I, you know, we've been telling people it's like, this is my most political record I've ever done. And it's like, my American publicist, George, he'll tell me certain people will pass on the record. They're like, oh yeah, we don't want to really do the political thing.
Yeah,
you know, it's like we don't really cover the political thing. It's like, really? It's like, how can you ignore it? That's my thing. It's like, it's just like, I'm just doing this record. To me, was like, I wanted to do something that was really speaking to the times that I'm in.
Yeah,
and I wanted to be a reflection of the times, and I wanted to really make a time capsule for this very unique time period we're in, and I wanted to just be painfully honest about where we are and where we need to go. And I feel like that is not like controversial. That's not weird. I don't think it's to think politically is, I think, really important, especially as a person of color. It's like, they don't want us to. This is the thing. They want us to ignore the news. They want us to ignore politics. They don't want us to engage with this world because they want us to think it's really boring and lame, because Canadian news is kind of boring and lame and it's hard to follow. And so we don't engage.
Well, you have you make a point on, I believe it is the song Skyline, where you're talking about gentrification, I believe, and just the destruction of the cultural heart of a town, of a city, of a community. And one of the lines here that's, as you were speaking, I thought of this part of that song. Walk through town, it was looking strange. All I saw was weed places. They want to keep us sedated. They don't want civic engagement. And then you go on to talk about what you were alluding to earlier, the LRT stations in Little Jamaica lead to mass displacement, condo ads with white faces. Who's going to gain from the changes? These are very important observations and questions. It is troubling to me that people would not want to engage with them. But I do think you're also touching upon a weird part of music making that has occurred over the last few years, is that music journalism is really hurting. and on the decline. Like, I can say that, like, you know, I'm getting offered things left and right because I'm willing to actually talk to artists.
Yeah.
And try to have what I hope are, what I strive, you know, I want these to be meaningful conversations. And what I'm hearing and seeing is that this kind of stuff isn't happening as much because of budgetary constraints, because of click, you know, website traffic is suggesting that that's,
I mean,
not,
that's it. Yeah. That's it for me is just the, this is another thing where the internet has really changed the landscape of our lives. You know, I feel like it used to be, you know, artists and these publications would dictate the culture, right? And they would dictate it in a way that was kind of organic. You know, like, it's like, we really get behind this record, we believe in it, and we're going to promote it, right? Mm. But now it feels like, you know, they let in the mainstream artists too much, to the point where it's like they dictate the terms. And it's like whenever Taylor Swift puts out any record or a remix of her record or whatever, it dominates like all the press.
Yeah.
Right? It's like these big fish, they take up so much oxygen. And it's become like, I'm just a music fan too. Like, I love music. And my whole thing is I have so much trouble finding new music because the kind of artists that I like get no coverage. They get no press. I have to search like I'm like a private detective to like find like tunes I like.
Yeah.
And it didn't used to be like that. Right. And it's like, I don't know. It's just, it's definitely a sign of the times where it's like, I feel like I see the same three artists, even whether they have a record out or not, you know, there's this fixation on them, and I don't know.
Yeah, and I just wonder, like, beyond what you're discussing on this record, I guess that's, I alluded to it because I think you would maybe potentially have a hard time getting attention somehow. Like you say, it's just for every artist almost, like it's just very hard to get people to focus on something and then to also retain interest in something. Because part of what I've been dealing with personally with this show is I have such a backlog of episodes now that I can't get them out. And I used to pride myself on being very topical and being part of the news cycle with the, everyone else is talking about Cadence Weapon. I better get my episode out right when everyone else, just ahead of the record coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening is we all do this, and I've tried to stop and stagger things a bit more if I can. In this particular instance, as people are hearing this, your record's out in a couple of days. So let me just say, I'm contradicting myself a little bit.
I appreciate it.
But what I'm also going to say, though, is I think, for my part, and I'm just being candid here, I've now looked at it and thought, wouldn't it be nice to be reminded of a record that came out a month ago by someone like me? Because our compulsion is to consume and dispatch. Like, it's out of our minds half the time because there was all this hype and promotion and everyone was covering something. And then I don't know if I just sound old or not, but I used to listen to one album when I was a kid and I liked an album. I would listen to it when it came out, and I would listen to it for maybe the next 2 years. And by the are we old? Is that still happening to younger kids?
We are old. We're getting older, but especially you. But
come on. Is it the touch of gray? You know, is it the salt and pepper?
It's the salt and pepper. When I start looking like that, you can call me old. it's good for you. You look good.
I'm happy with how I don't feel old. Let me just say that.
No,
I feel like I'm with it. I try to be with it, but not like you, who are, I still maintain, detrimentally ahead of your time. don't get the credit for your pioneering ways. And I find it frustrating as a fan of yours because I like listening to your work because I know what's, every time I'm like, okay, this tells me what's going to be hot and hopping in like 2 years. I didn't mean to say hopping. No one says that. I am old.
Yeah.
I'm from the 50s somehow. But anyway.
No, but that's okay, because here's the thing. When I was growing up, you know, people don't realize, like, listen, man, I'm from Edmonton. Do you think I was getting records when they first came out?
Yes. Right.
No.
No, you weren't.
Of course not.
Yeah.
No. We would get rap records like months later. I would read about an album in The Source.
Yeah.
And then I might encounter this CD somehow months later, months down the line. The internet didn't exist. So I wasn't like, oh man, like I haven't heard it and it's already gone and it's dated. It's like, no, man, if it's good, it's always going to be good.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way I think about my own music. Like, I know it's, you know, we're in this, you know, all these, you know, the streaming companies, they really push us and emphasize, like, put out as much music as you can, pump out as many songs, whatever. Like, I don't really want to do that. And I feel like I'm trying to prove the world wrong by just making really, you know, thoughtful, substantial music and hoping that, like, my core audience will believe in what I'm doing and will support it. And that's all I care about. I don't really, you know, it's very annoying, yes, that time and time again, I'll be a year or two or three ahead of my time, or like,
yeah,
I won't get the credit for, you know, things I've done. Like, I've never been nominated for a Juno at all, you know, for instance.
That's
like,
bonkers. But I mean, sorry, it's only bonkers if you believe in the Junos, and I don't care myself. But I also know that as an artist, it's meaningful. And
it's important to my mom.
Well, and to be in the game as long as you have, as one of, I don't know, like, I can't, yeah, you've always,
here's my thing.
You're always in the top 10 of Canadian MCs and hip hop artists. So to me, like, always, the whole time you've been out, top five even. Let me reduce the list. I'm going to make the list shorter. You're always in there, and I don't get it. So that's, yeah, but that's more, that incriminates them, the Junos. And I mean, with their bizarre application process, you could actually probably apply to be a best new artist and you'd be nominated. That's how it's so out of whack that, like, Caribou, I remember, won best new artist like 11 years into his career. Like, why are we supposed to place any credence in this award? Like, it makes no, anyway.
I mean, yeah. The whole landscape is very confusing. And it's like, for me, I just try and stay focused on the art, you know, and I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And if people want to follow, they can. If people like, you know, like it's happened to me and many times where I know directly, like, an idea comes from something I did. And I think that's cool. Like, I used to get really mad about it. Obviously, I have the song, you know, about not biting my shit or whatever.
Oh, yeah. That's going back a ways. Yes. You were asking people to stop biting your shit on your, like, first record.
which is
that's bold. That's really bold.
It's very hip hop. It's very hip hop. That was like hyper local. I was talking about like some people in the neighborhood. I wasn't thinking big picture.
I hear that. It's funny you say this because I, as a longtime hip hop fan, have had my struggles with how substantive some of the music can be and how topical some of the music can be, because I think a lot of it. And this is true of every genre of music. A lot of music and expression, because it's coming from a personal place, it can be about very personal things, and it can be sometimes overwrought. Like, I used the term navel gazing earlier. But one of the things I always valued about hip-hop is I felt like I was getting the real news. I felt like I was getting, you know, a perspective that I wasn't getting elsewhere.
Is the black CNN.
That's what Chuck D said. That's correct. Yeah. So, and I don't mean to maybe over... I don't mean to dwell on that concept or whatever, that phrase of his, but yeah, I will say also, I wondered if your tonal shift, going back to your last album and into Parallel World, if it was a reaction at all to where hip hop was at, you know, like, I mean, a lot of the pop hip hop is very much not talking about such, like, it's not very socially conscious. It's not the black CNN. It's like, the black CNN business section or something. Well, like, it's very much about...
It's the black Fox News.
Yes. Yes. That's a good way of putting it. Yes. I mean, that's a little harsh because I hate... but it's still... Yeah, it's a little more...
It's the black BuzzFeed.
I said this to Backwash when Backwash was on the show, and Backwash on the record, amazing song, Ghost, that we can talk about in a moment, but... I said this and I was worried about what I was saying because I do worry that I sound old and out of touch sometimes when I talk about hip hop, because what I said to Backwash was, it seemed to me, because at the time I think Lil Wayne, Kanye, a couple of other people were coming out in support of Donald Trump in some way.
Right.
And I was like, on the one hand, like, it seems ridiculous to those of us who love those artists. On the other hand, who has been more misogynistic? Who has been more materialistic? Who has been more rebellious, if you will, you know, in terms of when I say rebellious, I mean in just in terms of adhering to social norms and the law. He is really, to me, the avatar for a lot of terrible behavior that I always assumed in pop culture people were kind of glomming on to that sort of persona, knowing it's kayfabe. It's yes. It's like a bit, and you're just putting on a persona. Like, I don't think Method Man knows a lot about different methods. That's just his name. And so yeah. I know there's a little show. There's showmanship, particularly in hip hop. And so when you're watching a video and you're like, what the fucking, the Bentleys and the women and the money, yeah. Like, I kind of view it as good. I used to view it as like, good. I'm glad because.
Yeah, yeah. You, no, that's my thing. Yeah. I don't want to be like negative to that kind of stuff because, you know, sometimes it's aspirational.
Yes.
You know, and sometimes it is a true reflection of their existence. And it's like, you know, when people rap about street stuff, sometimes that's what all they can rap about. And it's like, mm-hmm. I'm never going to begrudge anybody about, you know, where, what their perspective is, you know, because that's what it makes rap great is it's all these different perspectives.
Yes.
But with the whole Trump thing, like when everybody was like promoting Trump, like it was so obvious, it's like, you know, they see themselves in him.
Well, know? I mean, like who has been rapped about more than him on some level, like going back to the 80s in terms of that aspirational absolutely. Aspect, like he presented himself like a don, mm-hmm. like a godfather type figure who ruled New York and, you know, birthplace of hip hop. If you grew up there, if you came up there in New York, you always pretty much knew the name Donald Trump and his name was on everything and the ego run amok and the boldness of that. I think there's a good, that's a real, it's not an undercurrent. That's a big part of hip hop expression. I think to overcome pain, trauma yeah. is to assert mm-hmm. yourself and like, I matter. And I, how much do I matter? Like I'm better than everyone else. Like that's that bravado. I know where it's coming from on that level. But mm-hmm. anyway, sorry, I'm on a tangent
but
here.
I want to like seize on that, like the whole better than everyone else, like the kind of typical hip hop stance or whatever. Like
yeah.
that was something I really was urgently avoiding on this album.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I didn't want to, anytime I was writing and I started going in that direction or like, because here's the thing, it's really fun to rap like that. It's really easy to do it and it comes to you. That's the first layer of rapping usually, you know, is like I can come up with some stuff that sounds cool and is about how cool I am.
And that's tough.
Like, that is
tough and tough. Bold.
And that's the essence of rap. That's it. Right.
Yeah.
But, I really fought super hard to break through and keep going deeper and keep going deeper. And even if it has, you know, elements of that, there's more meaning behind it. And there's like maybe a secondary or tertiary meaning to a lot of these songs. You know, like I really wanted to get to the meaning and get beyond the kind of artifice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, you're stunting a bit on Senna, but I also feel like there's it's not there, but it also doesn't feel like that's a really, your flow on that's ridiculous. Like you're, I don't know. I think that's a showcase song for that kind of mode.
Yeah. But, yeah? But here's the thing. Think about why. There's a why to why I made that song. You know, it's like I wanted to be, you know, the whole speech that I have, you know, it's like I'm not afraid to be who I am.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and it's like, who else would make a track like this? And who else could rap like this on a track? You know, it's like, I'm just like staking my claim yeah. in a way that isn't about being like, it's not like really bragging, but it's just, for me, it was like a self-affirmation, you know, like it's yeah. like, I know I can do this and I just want to show you, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I appreciate that. And I appreciate your sort of self-awareness of, it's rare. I know you as a thoughtful person and I know that, you know, nuance is important to you. And I feel that coming through on the record. I do want to
thank you for noticing that, because that's like my main thing that I find exciting is nuance.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're in a world where, you know, Twitter nuance doesn't work, you know?
No. And there's a lot of expression, you know what I mean? That is used as like a blunt, I like spending time with you and your work because I think about it later and something else occurs to me. And that's what I value in most of the artist I love. It's just like, oh, I didn't even clue into this thing that I thought on its face was this, and now that I think about it, I mean, that's the beauty.
That's my crusade. That's what I feel at this point. That's what it feels like. It feels like a way I would describe it is like when I look at, you know, New Music Friday on streaming, it's like I'm fighting against like a tidal wave and I'm like in a dinghy and I'm just, but I'm not going to sink.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's overwhelming, you know, but it's like, this was my mission. This is like, I feel like why I'm on this planet is like, I really want to like, I really believe in this mission, this whole idea of like, you know, you can, you don't have to rap about what everybody else raps about. And it's like, you can also, you know, I want people to come away from this album, you know, not just be like, yeah, like the songs. The thing is, this album is like all bangers. Mm-hmm. I think all the tracks sound great, but it's like, there's a lot you can take away from it. And I want people to leave these songs with something new, you know, like I want people to be able to like really come away with it and maybe be changed a little bit.
Yeah. Know? No. And I can say personally that has been the case with my, you know, like I said earlier, when I was a kid, I would listen to songs so many times that to this day, I still know the lyrics, which is handy when you're singing your kids' bedtime songs, you know, to get them mm-hmm, to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, why in the hell do I know all the words to that song I heard in 1986? Well, I listened to it enough. I guess, not to be immodest, I have a decent memory. I guess that's part of it. But yeah, mm-hmm. I just let those songs seep into my brain. And if they got to me, they got to me. And yeah, this album, Parallel World, is young, but it's getting to me on that level. So I hope it gets to other people as well. You alluded to the notion that on your first album, Breaking Kayfabe, you spent a lot of time in your, I think you said, your mother's attic making beats. This record, Parallel World, you have some helpers. I hear your, if not your production, I hear your ear for production and ideas. Yeah. But can you talk a little bit? So you've got, I think, some help on the production front. There are obviously some features here as well. Can you talk a little bit, at least, about some of the people you collaborated with on Parallel World? And if you can, if you want to, maybe even why you decided to work with who you worked with?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, on my self-titled record, I really started thinking about collaboration differently. You know, like I started realizing is like, it's not like I'm putting less of myself into this record because I didn't make the beat. Hmm. You know, like I started thinking of it as like, okay, it's more of like a curatorial experience. You know, it's like, it's still my art show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So with that kind of thing in mind, I'm always looking for the most innovative thing. I'm always looking for the weirdest thing, like anything that I haven't heard before, like that I hear that really gets me hype, you know, and I get really excited when I find that. And I'm always kind of keeping tabs on artists, you know, and it's like, for instance, like the producer of Africville's Revenge and Hard to Find, Martin Booty Spoon. He's somebody I've known for a long time out of Montreal. And I feel like he's also a black weirdo. You know, and it's like, we got to stick together, you know? So it was like, maybe he hasn't done a lot of placements on rap records, but it was just like, I can hear it. Yeah. That's the thing is like, some of these producers maybe don't really do this kind of music usually, but it's like, I can hear it. Like I can hear the whole package and I can see how it'll work. But sometimes I have to like, it, you know, convince people,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, the other thing is too, like my ear for beats is very specific and it's like, I don't like every kind of beat. And it's like, I only resonate with certain kind of sounds and ideas. So it's like, when I find them, it's like, they're glowing. It's so obvious that I need to rap on it. Like the beat for Ghost is by this guy, Danny Phantom.
Hmm.
And he's kind of more like a mainstream trap producer, who he's done a lot of beats for G-Eazy and like kind of like bigger name artists and stuff. And
to clarify, the producer of the song Ghost is named Danny Phantom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just clarifying.
I just wanted to make sure I heard that correctly. Yeah, yeah.
That's the first line in the song, Rolling with a Ghost, Danny Phantom.
Yes, that's right. But I didn't know. I didn't catch that. I just heard Phantom. I didn't catch the fact that it was someone's name. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I gotta. Okay, that's fascinating. All right, interesting.
It's more layers, man. I keep going.
And you've got Backwash on that song as well.
Yes. Yeah. That song is super fun for me. Yeah. Like, okay, so but I was just explaining just when I was in the session with Danny.
Yeah.
He was playing me all these beats, and you know, here's what I tell producers usually, or when I'm like just in the initial period of making a song, I'll be like, what is the beat that everyone passes on? Like, That's the one I want. Like, I want to hear that one. I want to hear the weirdest, the thing that you were excited about, and then you played it for somebody, and they were just like, I don't get it. That's what I want. That's exactly what I'm looking for.
Well, I mean, that is a very, that sort of resonates with me, that that would be your instinct specifically. I get that.
Yeah. And, yeah. Because it's fun. It's like a challenge or something, or it's like, there's something like, novel about it, you know. But that particular track is like, my first thought was like, I got to get Backwash on this record.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
because it was just a slam dunk to me. Mm-hmm. And I was really stoked because she was stoked to be a part of it. She was like, absolutely, it'd be an honor. And I was like, oh shit. So it felt like there's a bit of kinship, you know, like when she won Polaris.
Yeah,
I was so happy. I was so happy because I was like, this could have never happened when I first came on the scene, you know. Like, it's like there was not that level of really out there music when it came to rap in Canada.
Absolutely. Then, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, in a weird way, it's like, I feel like maybe I kind of opened the gates for that a little bit,
you did. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I really wanted to kind of like show love, yeah. You know, cause it's like, yeah. I feel like, in Canadian rap, you know, when I came on the scene, that didn't really happen a lot for me.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, there's always the kind of like Toronto, like, Screwface capital kind of thing, like people being like, oh, you're from Edmonton, like, you know, where's that? I ran up against a lot of opposition, like,
yeah,
automatically, you know. People were like extremely threatened by me. They thought I was weird. They didn't like what I was doing.
Yeah.
And that really, that pushed me to like go harder every time and all this. But, you know, the times when people were nice to me, like Buck 65, or, you know, people in like the prairies, you know, like Peanuts and Corn Records and like all those kind of people, you know, that was like, okay, so I'm gonna keep doing this. You know, we can do our own thing parallel to what's going on in the mainstream. Like, I don't need you guys to fuck with me.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just do my own thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, I always told myself I would never be like the people who treated me that way.
Right. You know? Yeah, so absolutely.
Whenever I see somebody who's like pushing the boundaries, doing something interesting in Canada, I'm like, ding, 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 ding. Let's go. Let's work.
Right.
You know, and I don't hesitate. So I was like, okay, let's do this. Like, let's make a track. And she crushed it. And in fact, I actually had to go back and re-record my verses.
Oh, because Backwash blew you away, kind of thing?
Well, yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I have to just raise the energy level, because it's going to be weird if I don't.
That's not that unusual. Noah 23 once told me that he would have to do that when he'd ask like Mocha Only or someone to be on a track, and they'd submit something, and then he'd send them what he did, and they'd be like, oh, okay, I didn't know you could do that. I'm not saying you said that to Backwash, but just this like, okay, yeah, I got to step up my game. This is my record. I can't just, you know. Yeah. So
I love that though. I love that. That's, yeah, this is the gamesmanship of rap.
Yeah.
Like, I really feel like the producers did that for me too, where it's like, I don't want to be the whack thing about my record.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
That's, I never want to be, I never want people to be like, when's the instrumental coming out? You know, like, I don't want to do that.
Bring Fat Tony like, back. I need more Fat Tony.
Yeah. Can this be just all Tony and you be a feature on your own album? Like, yeah. So I had to come with the heat every time. But anyway, just back to that whole like production ethos thing.
Sorry, go ahead.
So it's like, I did that basically with all the producers, all the features. It's just like, anyone who is like pushing boundaries in their world, I was like, I want you to be a part of this record, because that's the language that I speak. And it's like, I realize now, it's like, this is like making an album in some ways is like making a film, or is like making like a mixtape for somebody. It's like, you can have that directorial view of it. And it's like, I've gotten a little better at like letting go. But the thing is, there's so much of my production ideas in these tracks. Like, you know, there's Africville, for instance. Like, I was like, okay, like, let's try and extend this part a little bit longer, you know? You know, like, there's like a lot of stuff like that. Like, Play No Games, like, it was, you know, there was some stuff that I edited the length or whatever in different parts of it, like in the sequencing. So it's like, I'm in there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, it very much sounds like Cadence Weapon to me, if that makes any sense. And I think, for those who follow you, it will make sense. You know, like, this does sound, you know, despite the features and the guest production, this sounds like a Cadence Weapon record, but on a whole other level, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love to hear that.
Yeah.
No, that's what I mean when I'm like, it's like, you know, my greatest stuff, but it's like refined.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, absolutely. And I think you have a penchant for starkness, even though there's lots going on. I do think like sometimes the beats are super straightforward, and like On Me sounds almost like, you know, you're describing being tracked by everything, by our phones, by satellites or what have you, GPS, these sorts of things, and branding. But it sounds like a video game almost. Like I feel like yeah. I'm hopping around, you know, I can almost visualize moving around a video game landscape to avoid things. And anyway,
it's so, like a chase.
Yeah, exactly. So I not to storyboard video, you know, music video ideas with you, but that's mm-hmm. what comes to mind with some of your stuff. I feel like it has a sort of visual aspect to it. Like I'm sort of, I can picture your songs a little bit. Does that make sense? I don't know if that makes sense.
I want it to be that way. That's great. Yeah. No, I mean, I want to talk about that song a bit too, because that song, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's like, so that song, I was inspired by a few things. I saw this, I think it was on The National on CBC, where they were talking about this facial recognition technology mm-hmm. and how all the programmers were white. So they were mixing up black people with each other and charging the wrong people with crimes.
All right. Yeah.
And I was like, oh my goodness, this is like the totally the extent of how technology can really fuck you over, you know? And I was like, okay, I got to do a jump off about that. And it was also like, I was reading a lot about Clearview AI.
Oh yeah. Which, yeah.
I found so, so interesting that there's, you know, this thing that's usually used by law enforcement, where they can basically, it's a Google for faces, you know, and it's like you can just search, you can be at the coffee shop and you see a girl there and you can just take a picture of her and then search and find out all her info.
That's
and
crazy. It's like this, yeah.
Yes. And it's all based on your Facebook photos and any like web presence you have. And it's like, wow, this is a really dangerous tool. And it's like, you know, and it's okay. And, you know, I know that sounds like really like paranoid and like,
no, I was going to say the opposite. I feel like we've been talking about this for the whole time we've been using social media. Like, how much information are we giving these companies? What are we doing with it? Why are we posting all these things about ourselves on here? Someone's going to use this against us. And now what you're describing is exactly that. It doesn't sound paranoid at all. It sounds like it's coming to fruition. Everything we've been told about mm-hmm. the whole time. So,
just because you're paranoid.
Yeah, little Kurt Cobain. Yeah, he was also
not after you.
He was also onto something and ahead of his time, if I might say. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So there's that side of it too, you know, like where, you know, I wanted to really talk about just the extent of which we are tracked and surveilled and how the racial dynamics of that. But also musically, it was really important to me to have a track like this because it's really like an homage to old school grime music.
Yeah.
You know, like UK grime. And I managed to get this guy, Manga St. Hilaire, on the track, who he's like a OG grime artist from England who he's in Roll Deep Crew. Like,
oh, wow.
He's very, very legit artist. So, you know, it just made me really happy when I linked up with him. I linked up with him through Frieza Chin, who we like worked together on lots of tracks from my last record. He mixed my last album and they collaborate together a lot. So I was like, yo, do you think I could get Manga on this track? And he made it happen. So shout out to him.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like everything came together for you on this one. And I imagine it was weird to make a record like this in isolation, but you pulled it off and then some, if I might say. So,
thank you.
You know, congrats as always. Like I think really, you know, I'm a fan obviously. And it's nice to see you just keep pushing us to think and listen to things differently.
And thank you.
So for what it's worth, I value that. And, I do, want to ask you sort of what's next, if possible. I mean,
yeah. Hey, what's next?
Do you know, can you possibly anticipate what the future holds for you as you release this record and spread the word about it? Like, we know what you would normally be able to do. You can't do some of that stuff right now, but what are your plans, so to speak?
Well, I think the main thing for me is I'm actually writing a book.
Oh, yes, that's correct. Yes, that's right. How's that coming along?
So that's crazy. Like all pandemic, I was recording an album, writing, recording, conceptualizing this album. And I also signed a book deal with McClellan and Stewart. Mm-hmm. And so I was writing this book at the same time. And so I'm getting pretty close to finishing it. It's called Bedroom Rapper. And it's, you know, it's a lot about my career. You know, it's about being, you know, black in Canada, being a rapper in Canada, how I even became a rapper. But there's also this aspect of it that's kind of cultural criticism where, you know, I'm talking about just how rap has changed over the years and just opinions I have about it, you know, my theories about DJing, like it's just like a, and you know, Canadian music scene, like, yeah, and different music scenes I've been in, like Edmonton, Montreal, Toronto, like just my experiences and just some observations. So yeah, that's going to be coming out next year. I need to finish it soon. As soon as this album comes out, I can get back to work.
So, okay. So do you have a sense of what prompted that level of reflection upon your life and your work at this age? Like, you're not, you know, that's sometimes I've talked to some sort of art, you know, legacy artists, if you will, about when that idea comes up of a memoir or any kind of biographical assessment of their work. I know one person told me, like, why? I'm not done. Like, that's something you do when you're done. Why would I do that now? And so I
well, you know,
yeah.
I felt some urgency just because it's like, one, I mean, like, you know, I still remember now, right? Like, it's not that far away in my
memory.
Sure,
fair enough, yeah.
And I have a pretty good memory. But I also felt like, you know, it's not just like a memoir. Like, if, you know, I can write another book or something after that talks about other stuff that happens later in my career.
Right.
But it's like, I feel like I have just lived so many lives already. You know, like, it's like, I feel like I've lived and died like a few different times when it comes to the music industry. You know,
yeah,
it's
that's
like,
fair. I'm just, yeah,
you know, and it's like, I really wanted, you know, especially with the pandemic, is like, gave me a lot of time to reflect. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you know, why not, you know, take inventory of this now, you know, while I'm, you know, and it's like, if I don't, who will, you know? And also the other thing was like, I wanted to do this just to kind of just acknowledge just how much things have changed and what it was like for me and like the struggle I had.
Yeah.
So people maybe can appreciate it and maybe appreciate why I made the music I made, or like why I was coming from the perspective I was coming from, or, you know, like just give context to what I've done, you know? So
Yeah, totally. Again, I'm not questioning it. I guess I questioned it in that I asked you a question, but I'm not second guessing the virtues of the book. I can't wait to read it. Again, it's called Bedroom Rapper, and so,
And it's also, they asked me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so I was like, what am I going to say? No?
Absolutely. Like, yeah.
Well, they were like, do you have any ideas for a book? I'm like, yeah, absolutely, I do.
Nice. No, it's awesome. I'm glad you're being productive during a pandemic in particular, because I know so many artists that I've talked to are like, can't do it. The thing we're talking about, I made before the pandemic and I had nothing. I got nothing to talk about. I don't feel like
I don't blame anybody, because I that was how I felt initially. Like, I was like, wow, I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah.
For the first time in years, I'm just going to like soak all this in, because it's just such a weird time. Like, I want to just kind of be in it.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening is I ended up getting a bunch of ideas and I ended up writing an album. So it kind of backfired.
Yeah. As it does sometimes with creative people, they have to make things, or they you're called upon to make. You said McClellan Stewart asked you to make a book, but sometimes I feel like music calls upon you sometimes in a weird way to be like, you got something here, you better write it down, better, you know, record it, document this. And
That's the spirits, man, you know. Yeah. that's the ghosts, that's the kind of the ghosts I'm talking about. They tell me what to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, the record is called Parallel World. It's out via E1, I believe. Yes, that's right.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Now, where can people go to learn more about you and that record, and I guess to keep tabs on your book progress as well? Where would you like to send people?
Oh, I mean, there's a few places you can hit me on: Twitter, Instagram. I have a Substack newsletter. I do all kinds of stuff. I got a Twitch, you know, where I've been doing like DJing and streaming and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, just, but yeah, if you hit me on Twitter, Instagram, you know, you'll find out what's popping with me.
Okay.
I'm trying to, like, with this record too, is like, I really want to add a lot of context to everything. And I want it to be, you know, a big thing for me is like, I want to add a lot of permanence to this. Cause it's like, on the internet, stuff comes up and then it's like, when a new rap album comes out, it's like over, like,
oh yeah,
the next day.
Goes back to what I was saying earlier, but yes, in rap music in particular, it's always about what's hot. And the minute it's out, it's old news. It's weird.
Yeah. But it's, so it's like, I've been just kind of like building a narrative and building a story around this record that I think gives it a bit more significance for people, hopefully.
I would agree. Based on this conversation alone, I would agree. And no, it's great. I want to go out on a song from it, if possible. And yeah. Rolly, can you pick something from Parallel World for us to hear right now?
Absolutely. I think this time I'm going to say Play No Games.
Okay.
Yeah, so Play No Games is produced by Koreatown Acid, and she's a really amazing producer here in Toronto who, you know, when I see people who like kind of remind me of my experience or like my music in some way, I can see the parallel, but like other people can't. It's like she makes kind of, you know, strange techno music with like hardware, and it's very weird music, but it's like I feel the rawness of it. It reminds me of my first record. So I was like, oh, we got to make some tracks, you know, and we did. And it ended up being this song. And I feel like it doesn't really sound like anything else. And that feeling always makes me really excited. But I feel like there was something specific I wanted to do with this track. I wanted it to really feel like it was contemporaneous and it was just coming directly from my mind. And it's like, I feel like I feel like the first verse is me kind of talking about my experience in the music industry. Is like, I came from the future when I was a youth. Now I feel well suited. You could say tailored.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's like, by the way, if you analyze that verse, the rap nerds out there, there's a lot going on. If you like read it, like I'm doing some stuff I never heard anybody do. Like I was like, came from the future when I was a youth. Now I feel well suited. You could say tailored. Then I switch it. Right.
Yes.
Don't accept failure. Don't expect shit but my check in the mail. Rock chain mail. I don't need no vest. Might divest if it's disrespect. I invest, watch it gain interest, then I lose interest. Got me like, what's next, what's next, what's next? Right? So it's like, I love the change of emphasis. I love, this was like me just having a word game. That verse is one of my favorite verses on the whole album, just on a technical level. And it's like, I kind of return to that theme. Like, I feel like I've never heard anybody do that. And I thought it was really cool. And also this song, I dissed the Prime Minister as well.
Yes, so. You do. Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate that explanation and a little preview of what we're about to hear. You rapped for us, and I appreciate that.
Oh, man. Anytime, man. You know, hey, you know, Vish, you know what? I make these albums just so I can do these interviews. Did you know that?
I did not know that. No, you mean with me specifically, or just with
just
everyone?
You?
Oh, come
no,
on!
No, just you.
Get
I'm
out
serious.
Of town. No, I.
It's like the. I'm serious though. It is one of the highlights of putting out an album. It's like, okay, yo, when's the Beast interview?
Well, that's very sweet of you to say, Rolly. I appreciate it. I really do. I always have valued your time and your interest in speaking with me as well. And yeah, I don't want to gush too much more because I'm. You can't see it, but my brown face is a little... I'm blushing. I'm blushing a little bit. And I think we should hear this song now. So let's go for it. This is Play No Games by Cadence Weapon from the excellent new record, Parallel World. Rolly, thank you so much again for being on the show and for your time and for your efforts in making the world a better place with your work. It's appreciated, and best of luck with everything in the future.
Thanks so much. Yeah. Yeah. Vibe. Yo. KTA, yeah, we go all day, yeah. Came from the future when I was a youth, now I feel well suited. You can say tailored, don't accept failure, don't expect shit but my check in the mail. Rock chain mail, I don't need no vest. Might divest if it's disrespect. I invest, watch it gain interest, then I lose interest. Got me like, what's next, what's next, what's next? Yeah, what's next? Living in the past, now you can't progress. Can't process, feeling like Joel, cause I might just cry about my respect. Need receipts before I reset. OG flexes and no repress. No regrets, no I won't regress. Don't play no games, don't do recess. Hey, no, I don't play no games. Yeah. Okay. No, I don't play no games. Yeah. Look. Don't project on my project. This ain't a screening, more like a reading. You can get red. Shout out to Cool Man, Tribe Called Red. You can get judged, just like Dread. When the skin's dark, it look like a setup. If the skin's white, he won't go to the feds. Got me upset, got me fed up. But a closed mouth, don't get fed. Those old ways must get shed. Find a new path you can tread. Have no trust in the ones who've led. Yo.
Sometimes don't want to show face, but I know I must face the facts. My prime minister wears blackface, but he don't really want to face blacks. You know I don't play no games. No. You know I don't play no games. At all. Yeah. You don't know me, like contestants on Big Brother, but Big Brother does know me. Everything his hand and his eye can reach. Got me like preach, brand new church, head in the cloud, now it just got breached. Way too peak, got you thinking of worse, like a spinal tap. How your brain got leaked. Drafts got leaked, gotta find an app so you can't delete. All depressed, got you under duress, about to lose your life all over a tweet. Feel like Martin on Blue Streak, too much fame, make you tweak. Out in the streets, got you weak, hope that the cash don't breach the peace. Yeah. No. You know I can't play no games. Yeah, you know we ain't play no games. Hey. Too much fame make you tweak. Yeah. Martin on Blue Streak. Yeah. You know I don't play no games.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, it's always nice to have Rolly Pemberton, Cadence Weapon, back on this show. He comes back. I like when people come back. That's a good sign. It'd be bad if people stopped coming back. That's what I think. Like you, if you stopped coming back to the show, that would be bad. I'm glad you maybe came back too. Thanks for coming back. And thanks again to Rolly for appearing on this, the 610th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, you've heard about something and you're Googling it and you can't find it, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. By the way, if you're Googling for an episode and you can't find it, you should be able to find it if you're Googling for it, and it might lead you very well to vishkana.com. Also, like Creative Control on Facebook if you like, too, if you want to, if you use Facebook still. Or you can follow the show on Twitter at Vish Creative, or you can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at Vish Khanna, just my name. And I talk about the show, among other things. Sometimes there's photos of me with my family doing things, but whatever, you don't have to look at those if you don't want to. You can just look at the show stuff if you want to. Also, visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. I mean, if it wasn't for that, what's the point? You came back and then you also donated. I need both things if possible. It's getting a little untoward. But anyway, I just want to let you know that $6 or more a month grants you access to exclusive content. And if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, please just message me on Patreon and I'll get one to you just as soon as is humanly possible. But you don't have to donate $6 a month. You can pick whatever amount you want. Could be a lot more, it could be a lot less. Whatever you can find in your heart to contribute to keep the podcast going is fine by me. More information again at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to the fine Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about and place special orders at on their website there, blackbird.ca. Bird is spelled with a Y, like the old band The Birds, so blackbird.ca. Also, visit live at MasseyHall.com, where you can watch beautifully captured concerts by some great Canadian artists. And I'd also like to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support for this show. Everyone I just mentioned there I link to them on the podcast post. So just scroll through the description of the show, and if you want, you can just click on those things and be whisked away to their respective websites. Speaking of websites, go to jimguthrie.org to learn more about my friend Jim Guthrie, who loans me a little bit of music for this show, and he's a fantastic artist. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Cadence Weapon, and I hope you check out his album Parallel World. Don't sleep on it. It's a great one. And yeah, thanks for listening to this. Thank you for subscribing to the podcast if you do that, and if you don't, please consider doing so, and maybe telling your friends about the show. Maybe they'd like it. Maybe if you like it, they'll like it too. Like if you talk about the Creative Control with your friends, they might be like, oh yeah, podcasts. I think everyone's aware of what a podcast is now, but they may not know, and you can tell them about it, and that helps spread the word about it as well. Anyway, I must leave you. I will talk to you very soon, though. Thanks again for being you, and yeah, just take care of yourself. I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/news ad free. That's Amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.